Hey, everybody, it's Andy. Welcome back to the North Point Community Church podcast. Hey, at the end of this episode, please take a moment to subscribe to our YouTube channel and download our free North Point app where you can access all of our recent message content. And actually, the app is the easiest way to share all this content with a friend, and it's the easiest way to keep up with everything going on around here at North Point. But most importantly, I hope the following presentation inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey. Enjoy.
Well, thanks again for being here with us. Thanks for watching us, watching with us online, North Point Live, or maybe later in the week, whenever it is that, whatever time it is where you are. Thanks. My name is Clay, and I have the privilege of being one of the pastors here at North Point. And I say privilege because it really is it's a genuine privilege. I studied engineering in college and realized quickly that I'm not good at that. And so all of us are trying to find out what it is that we're supposed to be doing in life. And the fact that I have landed in this spot is just a genuine privilege, and it's a blast. My wife and I, we just had our fifth child a couple of months ago. And so I feel like I'm just like our child is waking up. He's now, a little over 3 months now. And I feel like I'm waking up too, because you just don't sleep much with a newborn. And then, then they start sleeping and you start sleeping and you're like, oh, life, like this is amazing how this works. And so, I'm so excited about this series. This has been so much fun to get to do since the beginning of January 1st, we realized that there are 90 days from January 1st to April 1st. And so we thought, you know what, instead of just talking about some other stuff that might be really important in life and hopefully helpful, but we thought maybe the best thing we could do for the first 90 days of the year is just go from the birth of Jesus, which is what we celebrate, what we talk about at Christmas, and let's just start there at the beginning of the year and let's walk through the life of Jesus. And so if you're new with us, I hope that you don't feel like you're joining late in the story. You're welcome to jump right in, just like you are today. But you can also track with us. So a lot of people have subscribed to 90.today and are getting the emails or the text message. Are you guys enjoying that, by the way? Anyone enjoying that? That's all. I see some head nods. That would be awkward if you said, no, we're not at all enjoying it, any part of it. So Evan has been running point and all that. It's just amazing. And it's just such a great experience for all of us. So today we pick up in the life of Jesus with this guy right here. His name is Lazarus. If you are a Bible person, you like reading the Bible, you're familiar with the story of Jesus, you're probably not unfamiliar with the story of Lazarus. What is Lazarus famous for? Anyone? He was dead, and then he became alive again. That's crazy, like literally. Andy talked about Nicodemus and how Nicodemus asked this question about how do I be reborn? Well, Lazarus is an amazing character, an amazing figure in the life of Jesus, because he literally died and was so dead. This is one of my favorite verses in all of the Bible, but the King James actually says that he was so dead that he stinketh, which is amazing. And Jesus spoke directly to him and brought him back to life. Do you have trouble believing that? Some of you are like, am I allowed to say that? We like questions here. We're okay with doubts here. I think doubts are a good thing. I feel like doubts do not shake the foundation of our faith, but doubts are significant and important for anyone who has faith. But today we're talking about right here, picking up this rebirth, this resurrection, this new life for Lazarus. And I want to just tell you what happened afterwards, because it sets the stage for what we're going to talk about today. And if you doubt whether or not Lazarus really was raised from the dead, you're not alone. There are people even then that doubted, but there were also people that believed. Here's the way John wrote it. In John 11, we pick up right here. He says, therefore, many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary had seen what Jesus did. They had seen Jesus resurrect Lazarus from the dead. They had seen it. Now, what do you think those who saw it, what do you think they did? They believed in him. Because if you saw it, you would believe in him, right? I mean, that's quite common. In fact, I don't know. This is so obvious in some ways. It's like, why do you believe in Jesus? That's crazy. That seems ludicrous. And they're going, because he stinketh, he was so dead that he had already started smelling, and then Jesus woke him up and brought him back to life. I don't care what he asks us to do or who he says he is, I'm all in. That's what plenty of people said. They believed in him. But you know this, that not everybody did. In fact, some of the Jewish people, some of the non-Jewish people, some of the Roman people, some of the people who were leaders in this day and time, they didn't believe in him. In fact, the next verse says, some of them went to the Pharisees, those are the rulers of the church, rulers of the temple, and they told them what Jesus had done. Snitches gonna snitch, you know what I'm saying? Like, they basically told on Jesus. They're like, hey, well, we're gonna go tell on him. Like, he shouldn't be doing this. Shouldn't be doing what? Raising people from the dead. You shouldn't be, you know? I don't know, but they were jealous. They were mad. They were, honestly, they were scared because of what this meant. And so the Pharisees said this, what are we accomplishing, they asked? What are we doing here? Here is this man performing many signs, not just raising Lazarus from the dead, but many other ones, though that one is pretty remarkable. They said, if we let him go on like this, then everyone will believe in him. Yeah, if he keeps raising people from the dead, everybody's going to be like, sign me up. I'd buy a ticket for that show. Like, I'm all in. And so they were rightly afraid. And look at what John says next. Then, John quoting the Pharisees, then the Romans will come and they will take away both our temple and our nation. Ah, that kind of hurts, right? But their fear was appropriate because, yeah, that might be what happens. In fact, that is what ended up happening, as Andy has been unraveling, unpacking for us in this 90 journey. That is exactly what happened. So from that day on, look at what they did. So from that day on, they plotted to take his life. And that sets us up for where we're headed with Easter. You start to see the road that people were walking down. And Jesus became such a celebrity at this point in his life that he couldn't go anywhere. And some of you remember Beatlemania? And if you, like anyone just genuinely, you remember when the Beatles were so big that they were everywhere, you know? Anybody, some of you, you remember maybe Michael Jackson when Thriller was out and it was like, I mean, he couldn't go anywhere. You know, I remember when Michael Jackson was on Oprah, big Oprah fan here. Seriously, I think she's a fantastic interviewer of people, and she interviewed Michael Jackson and they showed this clip. I remember seeing it as a kid and there were throngs of people going crazy. He couldn't go anywhere. For some of you that maybe you've been, I don't know, you were born in the 90s or something, maybe common to you would be Justin Bieber, you know? Justin Bieber has shut down shopping malls, you know? He couldn't go anywhere because he was such a big deal. People would go nuts. They would go crazy. They'd lose their minds. The same thing was happening to Jesus. This is crazy. But look at what John says next. Therefore, Jesus no longer moved about publicly among the people of Judea. He couldn't go anywhere. Everywhere he went, throngs of people showed up. He was shutting down shopping malls. He was such a big deal. Well, it makes sense because he was so popular because of what he was doing. And then also the fear of the leaders of the temple, the Pharisees, they were trying to plot to take his life. So he had loads of reasons to not be public about his life. So as we've been seeing in this journey together, Jesus came to introduce something brand new to the world and for the world. This is what we're going to talk about today. In light of Jesus's popularity, he came to introduce something brand new to us and for us. In fact, I want to just explain it to you. I want to explain it this way. I want to talk about greatness, because that's what Jesus was going to explain to us. He was going to reorient us to the idea of greatness. And so here's one example of the way I thought about illustrating this is the way an org chart works. You guys know this, right? In a business, some of you, maybe this speaks really well to you. Some of you, this is going to cause you to think about something else. You're going to be like, oh, this feels like school. But this is the way the org chart works, right? You know, this is real simple. There's all these little boxes, this organization. And when you're new to the business world or new to an organization, where do you come in to the organization? Well, you could come in anywhere, but Most people come in down here. You know, I'll put an I here, you know, for an intern. This is where I came in to this organization as an intern, you know. But then the American dream, what as humans, what we all want to do is we want to climb the ladder. We want to get as high up as possible in the org chart, right? We want to, because this person gets all the perks. You know, I one time asked a CEO of this big company, I said, hey, coolest thing about being CEO. And this person said, getting to use the corporate jet. Hello? I'm like, yeah, that's pretty cool. This person gets the parking spot. This person gets the biggest budget. This person gets all of the opportunity and ability to be able to make calls and make decisions. But this isn't just the way organizations work. Your neighborhood works this way. Your apartment complex, your friend group works this way. High school, college, it works this way, where whoever is the most popular, whoever's the most powerful, whoever's the most important gets all the perks. They get to push everything down and tell everyone what to do and decide where we're going to dinner and tell everyone what we're going to wear and how we're going to play and the way we're going to look when we do it and what's not cool and what's cool and what you should be saying, what you shouldn't be saying, and quit doing that and start doing this. That's the beauty of being on top. And Jesus is going to reorient us. He's going to flip this whole idea of greatness. He's actually going to flip it upside down. He's going to flip it on its head. See, Jesus actually, he shows us that this new definition of greatness that I'm going to give to you, it's an upside down kind of greatness. He's going to flip it on its head. And this is so important to you and to me. I've taught this passage that we're going to talk about today. I've taught it numerous times. In fact, one of the first times I ever preached at North Point, I got the privilege of teaching this passage. And I love it because it is so remarkable what Jesus is doing, what he's trying to share with us, what he is showing to us. And here's what he's tapping into, is that all of us have a desire for greatness. All of us have a desire for it. All of us do. Now, whenever you think about greatness, in fact, I want you to just think about for a second. When you think of the word greatness, who do you think of in this life? Who do you think of that's alive right now? Or maybe that's passed away, somebody from a previous generation. When you think about greatness, who do you think of? All of us have, okay, Muhammad Ali. Thank you for that. Muhammad Ali, yeah, I mean, he said, he called himself the greatest, you know. Maybe it is Muhammad Ali. Maybe it's an athlete like that. You know, for some of you, it's LeBron James. And some of you are like, no, because it's Michael Jordan. And some of you are like, no, it's Bill Russell. And it's probably showing how old you are based on what answer you say there, you know, because different generations have had different great ones. Maybe Babe Ruth or Mickey Mantle or maybe Jose Canseco. I don't know. I mean, when I was a kid, he was the greatest. And now, you know, says some odd, amazing things. But maybe it's some chef or maybe it's a leader or a president or... Basically, it's someone who has done something great. That's usually who it is. Somebody who's the GOAT, you know, the greatest of all time. The GOAT is usually somebody who's known for doing something great. But what we're going to learn today is, and maybe for some of you, this is brand new. For others of you, this might be a review. That not only do we have a desire for greatness, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But Jesus is going to show us that we're actually wired for greatness. We're wired for it. That you were meant for it. But not in the idea of fame or popularity or sheer talent or just stuff or wealth. No, in a new kind of way, he introduces us to greatness. And it is, not only is it incredibly profound, but it's incredibly accessible to all of us. Here's the way a guy named Mark tells the story. It's a narrative, basically. It's an actual interaction that Jesus had with his closest followers. Mark 9, verse 33 is where we pick up, and then we're going to look in Mark 10 in just a second. They came to Capernaum. So Jesus is, he can't go anywhere in public. He's having to move around in the dark. He's having to be covert about things. And he's just with his followers. And he was in this house and he asked them, he said, hey, back there on the road, when you guys were walking down the road, I heard you arguing about something. What were you arguing about? When I read this the other day, I thought, I mean, this is my life. Having little kids, like, I feel like this is all they do is argue about stuff. And then it made me think, look, was I this way as a kid? I don't think I was. I wasn't like this. You know, I was like peacemaker and just kind to people and never got into any like kind of instigation or trouble or and maybe that's not true. But all of us can relate to having some kind of argument, some kind of debate, some kind of discussion. And his disciples, after he asked them this, they got quiet because they felt like they felt some shame over what they were arguing about. They kept quiet because on the way they had argued about who was the greatest. And they weren't debating like the athlete of the day or the musician of the day. They were debating who were in these spots. Because they knew, okay, this is reserved for JC, all right? This is reserved for Jesus. We're cool with that. But now that you're popular, Jesus, now that you're shutting down malls, who's going to get to be with you? And that was what their argument was about. And Jesus, he foreshadows what he's going to tell them in Mark 10. Here's what he said in Mark 9. Sitting down, Jesus called the 12 together. So he's like, all right, let me get everybody together. Let me explain how this works. He says, anyone who wants to be first must be last, must be the very last, and the servant of all. He's foreshadowing what he's going to teach them in just a second. So fast forward a couple days later, same topic, same conversation. Some other stuff transpires, but Jesus felt like, I don't know if he was looking in their eyes. I don't know if he had this thought where he's like, these guys are not the sharpest knives in the drawer. These guys seem maybe a toy or two short of a happy meal. I don't feel like these guys are picking up what I'm putting down. He's like, I feel like I'm probably going to need to revisit this. You know, they're not getting this. So later on, a couple scenes later, then James and John, they're the sons of Zebedee. They were known about this together, brothers. I love the name that they were first called when Jesus invited them to follow him. He called them the sons of thunder. I have a friend who had a son named James and named his second son John just so he could refer to his sons as the sons of thunder. I kid you not. And I respect him for it, you know? I mean, like, that's very brilliant. Like, well done, kudos. So James and John, the sons of Zebedee, they came to Jesus. So Jesus had already introduced them, and he was thinking, I don't think they've got this. He's thinking he's going to revisit this. And then they show him, yeah, we didn't get it. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. You've had your kids ask you this, or maybe you got a niece or a nephew or your grandkids. You know, they start by saying, "Oh, you remember doing this in school? Like, hey, teacher, will you give us whatever it is we ask? Just we're going to ask you something. Can the answer to the question be yes, no matter what we ask? Could we lock you into that, and then we'll present the question?" It's a fantastic strategy, right? But it didn't really work for them. But Jesus, he plays along. He said, "Well, what do you want me to do for you?" He asked. He said, what would you like for me to do? And so they said, would you let one of us sit at your right and the other on your left in your glory? And they're like, and we have seen your glory. Wow, you are popular. Like, we're loving it. We're digging it. When you first called us, we weren't sure. We dropped our nets. We left our tax collector's booth. We left all of these broken down, messed up professions. We didn't have a lot going for us then, but we followed you. And even then we felt like, was this a good idea or not? But as we started following you, the other day, Jesus, somebody asked if they could get their picture with me because I'm with you. Like, it's crazy. I mean, it's bananas up in here, you know? Like, they're asking for autographs. Like, I'm thinking, like, this is going to be amazing. And so they're getting ready. They're like, hey, can we sit next to you? They're asking, can we be in these spots? Like, we don't want to be down here, or we don't want to be down here. We get it, Jesus. This is reserved for you. Nobody's arguing that. But could we ride shotgun? You know what I'm saying? Like, could we get, like, in on the glory of your glory? Could we get a little bit of that? Because that would be awesome. And so Jesus entertains them. He goes with it, you know, very kindly. He says, okay, well, you don't really know what you're asking, Jesus said. Can you drink the cup that I drink or be baptized with the baptism that I'm baptized with? He's basically saying, can you suffer? Can you sacrifice? Can you give up what I'm going to have to give up? Yeah, I know you want the glory, but can you withstand the gory? Can you go through the pain to get the reward? And of course they answered, yeah, of course, yes, we can do that. No, they can't. Well, in some ways they did, because these men ended up giving up their lives. They did. Each one of them was eventually killed because they believed so deeply in what they had seen. Foreshadow to Easter, right? And so Jesus says, okay, well, yeah, I mean, you will drink the cup I drink. You will be baptized with the baptism that I'm baptized with. You probably will eventually have to sacrifice and give up a lot. Now, the other 10, so the sons of thunder, they get to him first. But the other 10, how do you think they felt about this question? They were furious. In fact, Mark tells us, when the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. Indignant is like one of the most passionate words for anger. You know what I mean? They weren't just mad. They were indignant toward James and John. Now, they weren't mad because James and John asked him that. They were mad because James and John got to him first. You know what I'm saying? That was a massive voice crack. You know what I'm saying? They were not mad because they thought, how dare you ask Jesus that? They were mad because they thought, man, that kind of stinks that you got to him first. We wanted to ask him that. And so Jesus sensed that in all of them. And so again, he calls them together. So Jesus brings them. He's like, okay, one more time, guys, all together. I said it the first time. I don't think you heard it. Let me say it again. And so this time he uses juxtaposition. Powerful. He compares with something. He says, okay, now, you know that those who are regarded as rulers, you know, it's almost like you to put air quotes there for Jesus, you know, those who are regarded as rulers, you know, those kinds of people, they're regarded as rulers of the Gentiles. They lord it over them and their high officials, and they exercise, big word, they exercise their authority over them. They keep them under their thumb. They use their power to suffocate others, to oppress others. He said, you know how people do that. And then he drops these four words that we've used loads of times. I mean, it's such a great, powerful statement. He says to them, not so with you. If you're not a Jesus person and you're not sure, then you can do it your own way. You do you. But if you claim to be a Jesus follower, if you're trying to follow after him, he's saying you can't do it this way. You got to do it a new way. He says instead, whoever wants to become great. And this is beautiful because he doesn't condemn them for wanting to be great. He doesn't say, how dare you? You shouldn't want to be great. You should want to help other people. You should want other people to be great. No, he doesn't do that. He says it is hardwired in you to not only be desired for great, but to be wired for great. He says it's okay if you want to be great. But let me redefine it for you. And he says, not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must become your servant. Whoever wants to become great must become a servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. If you want to be great, great. Good for you. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be great. But Jesus flips it on its head. He redefines it. He introduces us a new way. He says, okay, look. It doesn't actually look like this. The goal in life is not to climb the social ladder so that you can be most important and most powerful. No, really, he's almost doing this for us. And this is hard to do upside down, so I apologize for how wonky that square is. It's more like a diamond there, but maybe that's perfect because, well, anyway, that's kind of where Jesus would go. But if this is you or me, he says, okay, this is actually the way this should look. That in the org chart, that I'm kind of flipping it on its head. I'm turning it around. I'm saying, okay, Yeah, if you want to be great, so be it. Be great. Desire to be great. That's not a bad thing. But let me introduce this new way of greatness. This is the most jacked up org chart, but you get the picture. He says, look. He said, what is that? That's like an organism in and of itself, not an organization. But this is what all of us are trying to do. We're all trying to climb the ladder. We're all trying to get to the top. But Jesus introduces to us this profound, counterintuitive, flip it on its head, reversal, upside down way of life, where he says, look, down's the new up. If you want to be great, you don't ascend to greatness. You descend to greatness. See, it's even amazing the way a stage works. We think that when you step up to a stage, you're becoming great. But Jesus is saying, that's not the pathway to greatness. The pathway to greatness is through descension. You descend into greatness. You step down into greatness. And if you find yourself in one of these spots, because he doesn't condemn them, he says, if this is you, so be it. If you find yourself here, okay, clearly this is Jesus. Okay, so his followers would have said, we're not trying to get there. That's reserved for you. But he's saying, but if you do land here, if you get to my left, if you get to my right, if you get to the point where you get to join in on some of the glory and experience some of the fame and enjoy some of the power, maybe some of you are, you have enjoyed some of the prosperity of wealth or some of the fun of being in charge. He says, there's nothing wrong with that. But just remember that the point of it is to use what you have for the benefit of other people. That's what it means to serve. It means to flip it around and go, these people are not here for me. I'm here for them. My job is to support them. My job is to, as Jesus said, to serve them. And he flips it all around because, as he introduces to us, greatness is not about what you have. Greatness is not about how much power you have or how much wealth you have or how much popularity you have. No, it's about what you do with what you have that will make you great. It's about how you use what you have that will make you great. It's about how much time you give away to other people, how much stuff you give away to other people, how much of your life ultimately Jesus calls us to do that you give away to other people. Now, around here, we have a consistent mechanism on how we do this. In fact, this is maybe one of the biggest parts of our whole organization as a church is to provide this for people, strategic service. That's what we call it. We call it strategic service. It's the opportunity to serve in a strategic way over and over again with the same group of people in the same way. See, some of you do this as a lifestyle, but you may never have considered how to do this in a strategic way. We believe that serving on a consistent basis in a regular way, as some of you have experienced around here, or maybe some of you that are watching, you've led a group or you've mentored others or you've stood in a spot to help others. You have experienced what I've experienced personally in life, that serving is an exercise of greatness. Serving is a way we practice being great. Serving is a way we experience getting on the pathway to being great through descending by trying to use what we have to help other people, to support other people, to serve other people. We've got, at our church, we've got over 5,000 people that serve in a strategic way around here. It's crazy. But our goal is not just to get however many we need so that we can get done what we think we need to get done. No. Our goal is to mobilize every person to be able to experience this. I feel like part of my job is to set up opportunities for people to experience serving strategically because of the joy that comes from doing it. In fact, we asked the other day, a year ago, we did a survey to all of our volunteers. We asked them, we said, hey, what does this mean to you? And we were trying to get better, and we asked them some ways we can get better, and they gave us some ways, and one of them said, strawberry cream cheese. That's the way. Like, you serve bagels, but you just use regular cream cheese. You took away the strawberry, you know, which was fantastic. It's excellent. It's helpful. And so we have added strawberry cream cheese to all of our volunteer rooms. I'm not kidding you. That's serious. And I love that person said that. That's a person who takes their cream cheese very seriously, you know? But here's what somebody said. Somebody said this. They said, I love this quote. They said, being able to use my gifts in a way that makes a difference. That's what I love about serving. I love being able to use my gifts in a way that makes a difference. So we read through some of these comments and we thought, you know what? Does everybody realize that they have a gift? Do you realize that you are wired to serve? The question is not, how are you doing this or where are you doing this? The question is, have you experienced the joy of using your gifts? And so in light of all this, we created an assessment. We said, hey, let's create this little tool. And so our team put together this assessment. They put a bunch of heads together and they created some profiles of the way different people are wired, because we're all wired uniquely, but there's some similarities in how we're wired. And so as a part of 90.today on Tuesday, you're going to get this in your inbox or as a text. You're going to get a link to this right here, to northpoint.org/wired. You could take a picture of it now, or you could write it down now. I would love for you to go take this assessment, and it will help you learn how you're wired. Our world is fascinated with assessments because it helps us understand us. And it's a good thing. I think it's great to know how you're wired. So if you don't know what your gifts are, go use this. We've created a tool to help you find out how you're wired, because we want you to experience the joy of serving. Another person, when we asked them what you love about serving, they said this: coffee and donuts always help. I thought that was brilliant. It's so true. Coffee and donuts do help. Another person said this. I love this quote. They said, I'm so honored to be a part of their lives, and I'm so grateful to Upstreet for giving me this opportunity. Upstreet is our elementary age environment. They always make me feel like I'm doing something so special when I'm the one getting so much out of it. I love that. And we hear this all the time. It's so crazy that people say thank you to us. Well, how is that true? Why does that happen? Why do people say thank you to us? Because they're experiencing the joy of it. As we were planning for today, I thought, you know what? We got to give people a chance to sign up, because some of you have never had a chance to serve, and we wanted to give you a chance to do that. So we've got some volunteers that are going to come, and they're going to hand you this little card. And I would love for you to take one. I'd love for you to grab a pen. You guys can come now. That would be awesome. They're going to pass these down the row. And as they're doing that, I want to tell you a story. In fact, I don't want to just tell you a story. I'm going to allow a friend of mine named Tim to tell you a story. And I got to be honest with you, this is one of the more emotional stories, because it involves the death of his son. But what Tim experienced in serving is just remarkable. You know, when I'm sitting up here and I get to stare at all of these lovely faces that are mostly asleep, one of the things that I have learned is there are different faces that stick out. And I saw Tim before I ever really knew him, because he's taller than everyone else and his head kind of sits above everyone. He sits right in this region right here. And then I heard about the story of his son, Taylor. There's pens underneath those buckets. So if you would, take a card and take a pen. Even if you intend to throw it away, take one anyway. That would make our team feel like that they're really successful in their life. You would be serving them by taking one. How about that? But Tim and his wife experienced, walked through something really tragic, something that no parent wants to walk through. And I went to the funeral, Taylor's funeral, about a year and a half ago. And what I experienced at the funeral was just remarkable, because of the way Taylor had used his life to help other people. And so we sat down and asked him if he wouldn't mind telling his story on video so that we could share it with you. And he graciously obliged. And I am so grateful he did. And it is an amazing story of somebody who has experienced the joy, the greatness of serving. So here is Tim Strickland telling you the story about his son, Taylor.
My name's Tim Strickland, and I'm a husband, I'm a business guy that in the community. I serve here at North Point Church, love it. Been involved in transit for 13 years. The reason I started was kind of selfish. It was, I just wanted to be a better dad. And my son was in seventh grade, and it was kind of, you know, hey, I want to be around what he's doing so I can learn what's going on in his life, and then maybe leverage that and understand that, and that way you can be better at what you do as a father. So, you know, I felt ill prepared in that I didn't know what I didn't know and what I was going to teach them, but we can go hang out with them. We can be adult figures in their lives, and just, you're your guys. I remember on Walking Wisely weekend, and they asked, you know, students to look up to their leaders and if they wanted to talk about a decision they had made. And I remember one young man just looking up and kind of nodding at me, and I'm like, wow, they made a decision to accept Christ. You know, that's pretty cool to see that happen and be part of that. So my son Taylor ended up being a high school leader for Transit, and he served with two other guys who are some of my best friends. They were part of my men's group. For Taylor, he was an only child, and these young men were like his little brothers, but he loved them, and he, you know, really invested in them. I mean, that was the closest to a sibling he ever had. You know, those same guys that he invested in were the ones who showed up for him. When he passed away, excuse me, he passed away on, he'd had a car accident, was killed in September of 2016. And those young men were all in college and they were elsewhere. And they came back and stood up for him. It was huge.
When I joined this small group, Taylor brought to me the ability to be outgoing and have the courage to encounter people that I'd never met in my life and open up to them in 3 years.
I can't put into words how much Taylor had an impact on me.
He reflected the love of Christ into all of our lives, and I'm always going to be very grateful for that.
He became more of a brother to me.
He taught us all how to be genuine, fine young men.
Taylor would help others without a second thought, even if it was an inconvenience to him.
He gave me this brotherhood, and 8 years later, they're still my best friends.
The empathy and understanding that he showed me has stuck with me forever.
I remember walking into Transit the Sunday after Taylor was killed or passed away. And there was a line of men, 20, 30 deep, who just wanted to give me a hug and tell me they loved me and they were sorry for the loss. It's one of those special times that you're like, wow. This is way bigger than investing in students. For him to be able to have that legacy of investing in those students, and Jacob and Chris and Sebastian and Alex and all those, Andrew, those boys who stood up there and talk about his impact, well, that's a legacy. And that his story continues to be told. A legacy that I could have never imagined. Investing my story in others has made me a better human being, a better father, better husband, better person, and better part of the community. Because I think that's what's helped transform me as a human being from something that's about me to something that's about others. So for those that are worried about they don't have what it takes, I think God has plenty of what it takes, and all we have to do is be willing to be useful.
I know some of you are probably thinking that is quite manipulative to use Tim's story. I don't think Tim would say it's manipulative, though. I think it's pretty genuine for him. I think there's others of you that are probably thinking, I hope that my son or my daughter or my grandchild has somebody like Taylor in their life. And maybe, just maybe, that's what today would be all about for you. You can go experience serving in loads of different ways. You can go ask other people, what can I do to help? You can be a better boss. You can be a better friend and just try to use your life, use what you have to help others. Or you could take a step to come join us, to come be a part of what's happening here so that you can experience an exercise of greatness, the joy of giving your life away. I love this line that Tim said at the end. For those of you that are worried that maybe you think, well, I don't have what it takes. I don't know how to pray, or I don't know how to, I don't know much about the Bible, or I don't know that I have it all together in my life. His line was, God has plenty of what it takes. All we have to do is be willing to be useful. How profound is that? So what I would love for you to do is I would love for you to fill this out. And if you're watching us online today, you can go to our website, northpoint.org. You can take that assessment, find out how you're wired, and that will give you a chance to say, hey, I'd like to join in and serve. But if you don't have a way where you are practicing greatness on a regular basis, we want to help. The very next verse in Mark 10, Jesus turns the corner and starts looking toward, walking toward his death and resurrection that we'll celebrate at Easter. Here's what he said. He said, even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. He said, hey, I'm not telling you to do something that I'm not doing. Even the Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve. And if you choose to enter in and do that, I can guarantee you that there will be people at the end of your life, just like there were guys at the end of Taylor's life, saying, that is a person of greatness. That's a great man. That's a great woman. And we want to help with that. So I hope that you'll take a step and join us in that. If you don't, I hope that you find ways in your own life to experience the joy of serving so that you can experience the joy of being known as someone who's great.
Well, once again, thanks for listening. If you'd like some bonus content on this message and all the messages that we're doing between now and Easter, I want to invite you again to go to 90.today, that's 90.today, and sign up. At 90.today, you'll find a host of different ways to engage deeper with our church and the extraordinary life of Jesus. We'll see you next time.